You know, to have such a large role in Matthew's version of the birth of Jesus, we know very little about the Magi, which is probably why we've speculated so much about them. One of the speculations is that they are from the east. Although the story says they saw the star in the east or at its rising, so some other scholars speculate that instead they came from the west. In fact, recently the Pope has suggested that it might be as far away as modern-day Spain where they came. We just don't know. That's the thing. We sing about three kings, but there's no indication at all in the story that they were kings. They're called magoi, from which we get the word magician. They're magicians. They study stars. They're astrologers. No idea that they were kings, although it's possible they could have served in the court of a king as magicians and astrologers, or at some center of learning somewhere. They are simply magoi. We often sing about three of these magi, but nowhere in the story does it say there are three magi. It says there are three gifts. Magoi being plural opens the door to numerous magi, male and female. There could have been a number of these magician astrologers, both male and female, all of whom brought the three gifts to the babe. Well, actually, in Matthew, Jesus is not a babe. Okay? That's Luke. In Matthew, Jesus could be as much as 2 years old. Remember, that's the age, the cutoff age that Herod chooses for his murderous intent for the children. So Jesus could be running around there. Have you ever imagined Jesus as a terrible two? We really don't know much about these folks who came to visit and pay homage. We assume they're Gentiles, non-Jews. But one thing we do know that it states explicitly is that they were carrying treasure chests. And when they arrived, they opened those treasure chests and they offered gifts of gold and frankincense and myrrh. All of them symbolic, of course. Gold, which could be tribute paid to a king. Frankincense, which was burned and the smoke rising indicated that our prayers were rising to God. And myrrh, of course, was an ointment used to cover the stench of decomposition once someone had died. These are not gifts appropriate for a child. They were simply the gifts that the Magi had to give. Now, later, they would become very appropriate, even needed, perhaps. They simply came, they opened their treasure chests, they gave the gifts they had, and, of course, returned by a different route, having been warned in a dream that Herod's intention for this child and all the children 2 years and under was not a good one. Now, in our day and time, we tend to talk about, in psychological terms, we tend to talk about our baggage, right? He brought a lot of baggage to that relationship. Yeah, you know her. She's got a lot of baggage. It's never used positively as far as I know. It's always a negative. Carl Jung, the psychologist and pioneer, really, called it the shadow. It's that part of ourselves that we don't like, that we don't even want to admit. Sometimes we'll be completely unconscious, but we carry around with us all the time. That part we never want to acknowledge. And when we don't acknowledge it, it comes out in several ways. One is by me projecting my shadow onto you. The thing I don't like about you is the thing I don't like about myself. Or fear about myself. Sometimes, if we just don't acknowledge it at all, it bubbles up when we least expect it, without warning. And the results are rarely good. But these are always spoken of in negative terms. I wonder what would happen if we took the Magi as our model. And instead of thinking of carrying baggage, or as Robert Bly describes the shadow, the poet Robert Bly gives us this image, it's a long bag that we drag along behind us, full of those things we don't want to admit or even pay attention to. What if instead we thought of ourselves as carrying treasure chests? Because we all do. Your life is a treasure chest. You have been given so many gifts from God that you don't even begin to understand how many there are. We are walking treasure chests. What if we saw ourselves as those persons who have received the gifts of God in such abundance that, like the Magi, all we can do is offer them back to God, go and share them with someone? Sometimes that gift can be food. We talked a little bit about that in the announcements. We're collecting food for those who don't know where their next meal is coming from. Sometimes it can be money. We'll take a communion offering and then a regular offering. Sometimes it can be time, which for many of us is more precious than money. Simply taking time with someone, listening, focusing, paying attention. These are all gifts given in abundance. But we tend to think that when we walk through the world, we're carrying this long sack, carrying this baggage, we feel weighted down, and sometimes that gets in the way. I'm not denying that. We do have those things that we don't want to acknowledge, but sometimes the focus on that gets in the way of our acknowledging the numerous gifts that we have, all that we have to share. I'm suggesting on this Epiphany Day that we take the Magi as our role model in this. They brought gifts. They weren't particularly appropriate. They just were gifts that they had. Now, we assume that they were very wealthy because with money and frankincense and myrrh, it would take quite a bit to provide those. But the story doesn't say that they're wealthy. They could have spent every single penny, although I guess they didn't use pennies then, whatever they used, every single bit of money they had for these gifts, which they then offered in trust that they would be useful sometime. We do that in this church all the time. We are a teaching and learning church. You know that already. We have interns every year who come from Vanderbilt Divinity School and from other universities, some all across the nation, to come here and to serve, to learn what it's like to be a musician, to be a counselor, to be a pastor, to preside at worship. Stacy David Heiser is going to be assisting me today with our prayer of great thanksgiving. You've heard Jonathan Carl do the same thing and Nancy Hawthorne. You don't learn that in seminary. You learn that here. And it's something that they are going to be called on to do again and again and again and again throughout their lives. Where will they learn it if not here? A part of our job is to look at folks and name their gifts, and once we've named those gifts, give them a chance to use them. It's not limited to interns. It's all of us. You are all in ministry. You all are walking treasure chests. And the invitation today is to simply open those, to offer up those gifts that you have. None of us will have all the range of gifts. We simply offer what we have to the work of God. One of my favorite writers in my youth was a fellow who went by the pen name O. Henry. I encountered his stories really as a preteen, and the thing that really captured my attention about O. Henry was that at the end of each story there was kind of a twist, some unexpected turn that I liked very much. O. Henry wrote a story about this day. It's called The Gift of the Magi. I should tell you that this is going to be a spoiler if you haven't read it, although my paraphrase cannot live up to the story itself, so I urge you to go and read The Gift of the Magi. There is a young man, James Dillingham Young, his wife Della. They live in a rented flat, an apartment. They have no money whatsoever, not even enough to buy each other gifts at Christmas time. James Dillingham Young has a pocket watch that he dearly loves, but he has no chain to go with it. Della has long, beautiful hair, but she has no combs with which to put it up. So they each get the idea that they will purchase for the other the thing they would most like to receive. The problem is they don't have any money. So Della cuts off all her hair and sells it in order to buy her husband a chain for his watch. James pawns his watch in order to get the money to buy combs for his wife's hair. When they open the gifts, they're essentially useless. She has no hair to put up. He has no watch to attach the chain to. But her hair will grow back. He will save and he'll retrieve the watch from the pawn shop. Even though they can't use those gifts immediately, those were gifts of love that required a sacrifice. I love the way he ends it. And because I love it so much, I'm not going to paraphrase that. I'm going to read it to you. This is the last paragraph of the story. The Magi, as you know, were wise men, wonderfully wise men, who brought gifts to the babe in the manger. They invented the art of giving Christmas presents. Being wise, their gifts were no doubt wise ones, possibly bearing the privilege of exchange in case of duplication. And here I have lamely related to you the uneventful chronicle of two foolish children in a flat who most unwisely sacrificed for each other the greatest treasures of their house. But in a last word to the wise of these days, let it be said that of all who give gifts, these two were the wisest. Of all who give and receive gifts, such as they are the wisest. Everywhere they are the wisest. They are the Magi. Let me paraphrase that again. Of those who give gifts around the world, we who open our treasure chests and offer those gifts to others, we are the Magi. Thanks be to God.